Big Blue Kickoff Live.
And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. After a two-week hiatus, we are back up and running. So glad you could join us. Paul is well-rested. He's back from vacation. The tan is still in good shape. I know you can't see us, and we will be returning to video shortly before we get to training camp. But I promise you, everybody, Paul is in very good shape. He's animated. Paul, I know you've been dying to get back on the microphone.
I am so rested. I am so energized. Public service came to me to borrow some of my energy today.
Really?
I am that jacked.
Well, it has been quite some time.
I nearly went outside and constructed all of the fans' bleachers for training camp all by myself. That's how pumped up I am for
this. And you cut the grass, too. Let's not forget about that.
Well, and seeded.
There you go. You're a man of everything. Renaissance man. Well, it's good to be back up and running, as we mentioned. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets as well using hashtag GiantsChat. Same setup as usual. Also going to be joined momentarily by Jerry Coleman, 105.7 The Fan. He's the Ravens beat writer, beat reporter, as we continue to preview all the Giants' upcoming matchups. So we'll resume from where we left off right before our break. But in terms of what's on the plate, Paul, for the Giants, before you know it, training camp will arrive later next week, and the team is going to return to the facility. And, you know, I'm sure, obviously, the players are working out amongst themselves. The biggest storyline that I've seen over the last 2 weeks, Odell Beckham has been in Germany, Paul. I don't know if you saw that. And I can't tell you the fanfare that he received overseas.
What in the world? Is he, like, giving away money? The streets were just filled with people chanting, OBJ! At one point, he actually got up on top of the roof of a vehicle.
And the video is on Giants.com and the Twitter handle.
Yeah. I mean, it's like he's Pele or something, right?
Well, as I mentioned, I wrote this on Twitter, Dirk Nowitzki better move over because Odell Beckham is apparently taking this over. And you know what's also interesting? How's this for irony? I was on Twitter, Marcus Kuhn, former Giant who's now with the Patriots.
Sure.
He tweeted out a photo on Instagram that he was at LSU's campus this week. And included Brad Wing and Odell Beckham in the tweet. So while he's at the alma mater of Beckham, Beckham's in his backyard of Germany. How's that for a twist?
Maybe Beckham could afford the trip to Europe a little easier than Marcus Kuhn could. I don't know.
The case.
Perhaps.
Considering the popularity.
I also noticed that the Giants' trip to London against the Rams this year has been previewed by a trip to England by Victor Cruz this past week.
Correct. He's been out there.
So the Giants have been out and about and doing what they need to do to get ready for the season. And I tell you what, there's a lot of energy around this place. I've only been around here for about an hour since before the show. But a lot of smiling faces, a lot of people getting back from vacation. And, you know, that's a really cool thing because, let's face it, we really have a marathon here. Hopefully for the Giants fans out there, this marathon will extend into January and maybe even February. But, you know, once this thing starts and the players report here on the 28th, that's a week from Thursday, Lance, it's full go, 125 miles an hour. Foot is on the pedal and we're going vroom right to the end.
Well, and speaking of that, Paul, while we were away, the Giants did announce their training camp schedule. Now, for those of you who haven't had a chance to take a look at it, you go to Giants.com. There's an entire article dedicated to that. But just to give you an idea, Friday, July 29th, a week from this Friday, is going to be the first practice at 10:40 a.m. Compared to last year when Tom Coughlin was running things, you know, most of the practices were mid to late afternoon.
And some nighttime ones.
Correct. This year now, they're shifting it all to the morning. So if you're planning to come down to the Giants training facility, just keep that in mind. It's going to be heavy morning schedule. Go to Giants.com. You can see the entire training camp slate. And we'll get to your phone calls a little bit later on here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. But right now we want to shift gears to some of the Giants opponents that we are continuing to preview. And today we're going to focus on the Baltimore Ravens as the Giants will go head-to-head with the AFC North throughout the course of this season. And kind enough to give us a few minutes to preview the Ravens is Jerry Coleman, the Ravens beat reporter for 105.7 The Fan. Jerry, Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino here with you on Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Guys, doing well. Just actually leaving this infomercial press conference with Joe Flacco, who is becoming official partners with a local bank. But more importantly, we were looking at his status for training camp coming off the ACL, torn ACL injury, and he looks to be on par to be ready for training camp. I don't know when he'll take full reps, but seems to be on the comeback trail, seems to be moving all right, and he certainly wouldn't fiddle around with a bunch of kids for a commercial if he wasn't in proper shape. So that's a good sign for the Ravens for their signal caller.
You know, one of the guys that he'll be throwing to this year, I mean, Steve Smith apparently is back, and you know, hey, this guy's a Hall of Famer as soon as he gets off the field. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. I don't know how much production he's got left in him, Jerry, but they also brought in Mike Wallace, who was a real big bust with the Vikings. So how do you see the receiving corps shaping up?
Well, it's very shaky because Smith is coming off a major injury now, close to 37 years of age. Was going to retire last year, frankly, and decided against it after the injury. Didn't want to go out on those terms. So he's come back, and because of the fact that their top draft pick from a year ago, Rashad Perryman, didn't play a single down during his rookie year and just re-injured himself during the mandatory minicamp, that's a major cause for concern. So that's why they went out and got Wallace. But you're right, has been on the downside of his career, but he's an insurance policy because they're not sure of the status of Perryman and Smith right now, and that's a major, major concern because they're looking for guys for Joe Flacco to throw the ball to. It seems like Dennis Pitta, who's coming off a major hip injury, should be available, and they seem pretty set in the tight end department. But the receiving corps has always been an issue for the Ravens ever since they came into existence.
Absolutely, and especially with losing some players to free agency, Torrey Smith, and injuries, as you noted, Jerry. You also alluded to the tight end position. You mentioned Dennis Pitta coming off the injury. Crockett Gilmore emerged late last season in his place. He's still on the team. And then they also went out and they signed Benjamin Watson, who made a name for himself with the Saints a year ago. You know, what does the depth chart for the tight end position look like? Who's right now leading that charge? And, you know, are you expecting perhaps a lot of double tight end formations considering they have the personnel?
Well, it's funny. I just did a podcast with my partner Jason Locke and Fora of CBS. We do a podcast for Baltimore-related stuff at BMOshow.com. And we were talking about the tight end position. It's actually very deep because I didn't even mention one of their draft picks from a couple of years ago, Max Williams, who was sort of underachieved. Crockett Gilmore has been more prominent, but Gilmore and Pitta coming off injuries too. The Ravens had so many people injured last year. That's why they changed their training camp schedule and their regimen, but that's why they also went out and got Benjamin Watson, because of the fact they weren't sure of the health status of Pitta and Crockett Gilmore. So they're deep at that position. Sometimes, though, when you're deep, that means you don't have anyone at all. I think they'll have someone productive come out of that position, but I think they're looking for at least two of the four to be very productive, and especially targets in a two tight end set for Joe Flacco to utilize, because that's something that Mark Trestman has tried to implement. It didn't work so well last year, especially when Flacco got hurt, and they had so many health issues. So Trestman and Flacco still haven't come together on the same page, in my opinion, so that's something worth keeping an eye on as well.
Jerry, let's ask about the offensive line before we get to Forsett and the running game, because it seemed to me one of the eyebrow-raising moves, especially early in the first round, was Ronnie Stanley being selected by the Ravens so high when everybody knew he would be a top 15 pick, I believe. But there are at least some folks, and some of the TV folks in particular on the national broadcasts, who thought that the Ravens might have looked at Tunsil if they were going to go O-line, might have looked at Conklin if they were going to go O-line, but they wound up taking Stanley. Was that at all a surprise to you coming out of Notre Dame? He certainly had high accolades, but that's a guy who I don't know a lot of people had him targeted for Baltimore.
Listen, Tunsil was their guy. As soon as they saw the video, they changed their course of plan. Eric DaCosta admitted as much again during that podcast that we do, and he told us, you know, he was just completely thrown off by the fact that this video came out at the last second. He spoke with Ozzie Newsome about it under Steve Bisciotti, and they decided to go the route of Ronnie Stanley. He was a safer pick. He was a guy they had at the top of their board. He was just behind Tunsil, so he was second on their chart in terms of offensive linemen, and that's where they were going, is someone to protect Joe Flacco's blind side. So it wasn't a surprise when they drafted him. It is sort of a surprise that they're going to start him from day one at the left tackle position. But Eugene Monroe was there. He had a falling out with John Harbaugh, a lot due to injury concerns because of the fact that he never seemed to be healthy and collected a lot of money. The Ravens gave him a big contract, and then he seemed to never play. So that's something Bears witnessing as well, is what transpires on the left side of the offensive line. They also lost Coleccio Semele as the Raiders paid him a lot of money in free agency. So they have a patched-up offensive line. Jeremy Zuta, their center, is coming off surgery. They still have Marshall Young at right guard. But they're going to go with Ricky Wagner over there at the right tackle position, which is going to be very interesting to watch.
Let me ask you for a second, Jerry, about Eugene Monroe. I mean, I know he's not a Raven anymore. I don't know how much you have still dealt with him during the course of the offseason since he was cut. Where do you think he might land? There are certainly a lot of people here in New York who think that the Giants might be a great spot for him.
It could be a possibility. I mean, the guy still has talent. It's just a question of staying healthy. That's something he's been unable to do. And he just had a complete falling out with the Ravens. He was never around during the offseason. So, honestly, I haven't spoken to him since the end of last year. He was persona non grata at the Ravens' offseason workouts. They basically told him to stay away. And you knew at some point they were going to either cut him. They had tried to trade him. But I think every team in the league knew that he was trade bait and the Ravens were going to get rid of him. So he's going to land somewhere in the NFL. The Giants could be a destination. He's young. And he can still be productive if he's healthy. But that remains a huge question mark, and his motivation does as well. He seems to have a lot of other interests outside of football.
Well, there's certainly the whole thing about the potential legalized marijuana issue that he always tweets about. This a personality thing with Harbaugh? Was he liked by his teammates? Was he a good locker room guy? And then I think the other question that Giants fans want to know is, do you get the sense that he feels he's got to be a left tackle, or would he be willing to play the right side? There were some reports that had come out that before the Ravens had cut him, interested teams like the Giants, who wanted him maybe to play the right side, were getting rebuffed by such a request.
Well, I think he was pretty much a like guy inside the Ravens locker room. I haven't heard a lot of players come out and say, you know, defend him in any way. And you know, John Harbaugh tried to portray it as an amicable parting, but the marijuana campaigning and the lack of practicing and just not being healthy, I think, irritated the coach to the point where they had to cut ties. As far as him moving to right tackle, I think he'd be open to that. I think at one point, you know, he had his mind set on being a left tackle because, as we all know, it pays a lot more money than being a right tackle. But now that he's received his payday, perhaps he would be willing to move over to the right side and help out his next team in that position, especially if that's his only alternative.
Talking with Jerry Coleman, Ravens beat reporter for 105.7 The Fan. With Monroe out of the picture, Stanley in, as you mentioned, Jerry, it's somewhat of a patchwork type of Ravens offensive line. And if you look at the running game for Baltimore from 2013 up to last year, you know, they had made strides. They went from a team that had a hard time running the football to a team that had some more consistency, partially because of Justin Forsett, who now seems to be the workhorse. He was just given a new contract in the offseason. He seems to think, at least from what I've read and from what I've heard, that, you know, he's got enough gas in the tank because he hasn't been a starting running back for much of his career. He's been more of a veteran journeyman. You know, what's the outlook for Forsett coming off of an impressive 2015 campaign, and do you foresee him still getting the bulk of the workload?
Yeah, he's going to be their number one, but he's also a guy whose season ended early with a knee injury. So we'll see how he comes back. But so far in the camps, he seems to be healthy. But they have depth at running back. They drafted a kid, Kenneth Dixon. They have Terrence West. They have Lorenzo Taliaferro. They even have Trent Richardson lying around in case they need him. But basically, he's going to be used in training camp to carry, you know, for a bunch of reps. It's, you know, it's Justin Forsett and really a group of guys that are basically unproven in the NFL. Forsett had a Pro Bowl year, his first year with the Ravens a few years ago, but then the injury did set him back last season. So we'll be anxious to see how he does bounce back from that. But all indications are he is their top running back going into camp.
Well, speaking of injuries, you went through a boatload of them, as you mentioned, on offense, Perryman, Forsett, Flacco, so many guys looking to bounce back. On defense, their defensive leader, Terrell Suggs, also looking to bounce back from the Achilles injury. What's his status? Is he going to be ready for training camp, and what's his outlook for the season?
That's like the $64 million question, because we haven't seen him or heard from him, except on Ballers last night, if you want to count that. Since he injured himself in week one against the Broncos. He just went undercover. So a couple of sources have told me he's been in town working out, looks to be in great shape, and is walking around. He's now torn his Achilles twice in the last 3 years, and again, is getting up there in age, like Steve Smith, just a few years younger at like 35. So we'll have to wait and see what type of shape he's in, but he's going to be key to this Ravens defense this year. He and Elvis Dumervil have to be more productive in terms of the pass rush that really hurt the Ravens, especially with the secondary last season. So that'll be something that certainly everyone will be watching the first few days of the training camp, what type of shape and condition Terrell Suggs is at, because it's unknown.
Well, and Jerry, you mentioned that this is the second time he's had an Achilles injury. So compared to the first time, how are the Ravens in terms of their depth? How much better shape are they in to absorb and deal with a Suggs player who's not necessarily 100% compared to their previous stints with him?
Well, that remains to be seen, because they drafted a bunch of defensive players that are unproven right now. Kafusi and a couple other guys that can play the position that Suggs can. So that remains to be seen. I mean, they're still looking for someone to help out C.J. Mosley at the linebacker position, whether it be or Arthur Brown. So there's some jobs that are being fought for in training camp. So I can't really assess how deep they are at that position until I see them get out there and start hitting each other right now. It's really too early to tell, even on paper. I mean, I would say they are deeper, because the guys they have are a lot of the guys that are still around, minus a Chris Canty, who retired, or they just said, go ahead and call it a career. But most of the other guys are still with the team, just a few years older is all they are, and hopefully more productive than they were a few years ago when he was out, because that certainly hurt the team.
Jerry Coleman from The Fan in Baltimore joins us, Ravens beat reporter. Final question for me, Jerry. Let's talk about that secondary for just a second, because Eric Weddle comes over from the Chargers, who to me, I know he's a little bit long in the tooth, but I think he was the premier safety on the free agent board coming into this offseason, and I thought the Ravens did a good job to lock him up.
Agreed. He's a playmaker. He's a guy who can set the defense. He's not Ed Reed material, but he is the closest thing they've had since Ed Reed departed, and they needed some of that leadership, frankly. So that will be a big addition. They're going to be moving Lardarius Webb to safety. They're also, going to have Jimmy Smith back, hopefully healthy, so that's going to be huge for them. And, I mean, the secondary has been patchwork for the most part because of injuries to Webb and to Smith. They also have Sharice Wright, a guy I'm skeptical on, but has ties to Jimmy Smith and has impressed the coaching staff. So he could line up at times as a starting cornerback with Jimmy, and they use Weddle and Webb there. Webb more of a nickel in the secondary. So, on paper, they look a lot stronger than they were a year ago, provided Lardarius Webb can stay healthy, because this also is a guy who's torn his ACL on multiple occasions.
Well, Jerry, before we let you go, speaking of the secondary, and this is more of a Giants tie-in, I know Will Hill's no longer with the team, and, he probably was maybe one of the lone bright spots for that Ravens secondary that you mentioned last season. Just to update Giants fans, because they tend to always bring up former players, especially when they thrive elsewhere, what was your impression of what Will Hill did for the Baltimore Ravens? I know they parted ways with him because obviously he's had some off-the-field issues, but, was that the main problem for him still in Baltimore? How far along did he come during his stint in Baltimore?
Well, he was sporadic on the field, and then off the field, as you just alluded to, the continuous problems with failed drug tests and such really, rubbed the Ravens the wrong way, because they had a long talk with him when he arrived in Baltimore and tried to clarify things and make sure that he was going to be on the same page and cleaning up his act and fell into trouble on multiple occasions. And again, John Harbaugh, he just doesn't tolerate that. So he is John Harbaugh. One thing John Harbaugh has done is really tried to mold this locker room into his type of personality, with guys that he can trust. He has a leadership council. A lot of the guys have been there, you know, in the nine years now that he's been with the team, going back to Joe Flacco. Justin Tucker, who just re-signed as the kicker, has known nothing but John Harbaugh as the head coach. So he likes to have his guys now inside that locker room now that the Ray Lewis's and Ed Reed's of the world are gone. And that's why there's going to be a lot of pressure on John Harbaugh, I think, to have a productive season. Just had his first losing season as a head coach, 5-11. They do that again, I wouldn't say he'd lose his job next year, guys, but he'd certainly be under the microscope the following season if they were below 500 once again.
Well, we'll get a look at the Ravens when they play the Giants week 6, October 16th, when Baltimore comes up here to MetLife Stadium. And certainly by that point, you know, they always say it takes about a month in before you kind of know what a team really is. Both of these teams should have a pretty good idea of what their future lies during the course of the season.
Absolutely. I know they're making back-to-back trips to the Meadowlands. I don't know if it's the Giants first or the Jets first, but they'll be going up there two straight weeks. So they last year they had a killer schedule to start the year, and especially on the road. They had to make three different trips to the West Coast. They don't have to do that this year, and this is one of the easier patches of their road trip span is these back-to-back trips to the Meadowlands coming up in the early part of the season.
Interesting. It'll be the Giants in week 6, and as you mentioned, Jared, it'll be then the Jets in week 7. So back-to-back trips for the Ravens to East Rutherford, New Jersey. Though if you're going to make back-to-back trips,
I believe they will come home in between, by the way.
I was going to say, well, for the sake of convenience, it's good to be going only to New York from Baltimore as opposed to making a trip, like you said, to the West Coast back-to-back.
Hey, Jerry, thank you, Lucky Stars. At least you don't have to go to London.
Exactly. Believe me, that's not something they're lobbying for either.
I hear you. Jerry, listen, we greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, guys.
You got it. Jerry Coleman, Ravens beat reporter for 105.7 The Fan, with some great insight on the Ravens, number of injuries they're dealing with, some new personnel, some good stuff also on Eugene Monroe in terms of perhaps what he's going to look for as he pursues free agent options.
You know what I found humorous as somebody who, you know, covers the Giants for a living on a regular basis? I like talking to these other beat reporters from other cities who have the same problem finding out about mysterious injury ailments with superstar players who, oh, he hasn't been around. Nobody has seen him. Nobody has talked to him. Nobody has any clue as to how the guy's doing. That does happen around the league a lot more frequently than we might think.
Absolutely. And, you know, what you also just brought up, Paul, while a lot of fans feel, you know, why us? Why does it happen to the Giants every season? And then you hear just now from the Ravens, I mean, look at how many notable players they lost or dealing with questions even heading into training camp.
In a way, they were the AFC's version of the Giants last year.
I think that's a fair comparison. I would agree. I mean, you lose your quarterback, your first-round pick from 2015.
At least the Giants didn't lose Eli.
Knock on wood. But you lose your first-round pick. Remember, Perryman was their first-round pick in 2015.
Yes.
And he was hurt in training camp. So then when he was put on IR in November, Paul, he missed the entire season. Mm-hmm. So he has yet to play in one regular season game. Steve Smith, your number one wideout, he goes down. You lose Torrey Smith to free agency, so you have limited options. And then we didn't even touch on defense yet, too.
I think, you know, one thing, here's what I will say. I respect Ozzie Smith a lot as a
Ozzie
GM.
Newsom.
Ozzie Newsom.
Yes.
Ozzie Newsom.
Cardinals, shortstop. Hey, maybe
Hall of Famer, too.
Yeah.
They're both Hall of Famers.
Oh, who knows? He could go deep in the hole, too, Ozzie Newsom.
I have great respect for Ozzie Newsom. I think he has built a sensational program down there. You can pretty much guarantee that the Ravens will be in the playoff hunt going into every opening day. Now, whether or not it manifests itself that way because of injuries or because of something else, look, they don't make the playoffs every year, but going in, you usually have an idea that they're going to be a tough team to play. And that's, you know, that's what you want. You, over a course of years, you want to know that when we play those guys, you know, you're going to have to ball because they're going to give you a game on Sunday. And that's how I feel about the Ravens. I never think of them as being, you know, just an also-ran or just a team on the schedule. That's a team that's going to come to hit you.
Gritty team. And yeah. Toughness on defense is certainly a big staple of what their franchise has been all about, even before Harbaugh came there. You go back to Ryan, Marvin Lewis, and all
those guys
on defense. I agree with you. It's going to certainly be a tough challenge, and they're going to have a different look, especially with all of these players coming back to full health. He's Paul DiTino. I'm Lance Meadow. It is good to be back here on Giants.com after a two-week hiatus. Big Blue Kickoff Live back up and running, getting you set for training camp. We're going to open up the phone lines here, 201-939-4513. Also, send in your tweets, hashtag Giants Chat. We will get to your tweets. And just a reminder, in case you're tuning in, if you're not seeing any video, it's not your computer. There's no technical issues. We're just doing audio today. We're going to be doing audio for the near future, and then hopefully once training camp starts, we'll be back up and running with audio and video. But you can still tune in to Giants.com, listen to the program, interact with us on the phone lines. And speaking of that, let's get the phone's rolling. Jerome is in Charlotte. He gets us going on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Jerome, how's everything?
Hey, how's it going? I just want to say, first of all, I miss y'all guys. I just love the insight y'all have been right there, letting me know, even though I'm in, North Carolina now, but originally from Jersey. My big question is about Newhouse. I remember reading a report that after the OTAs, Newhouse was going to go to like a offensive training camp or something to enhance his.
No, that was John Jerry, Jerome. He went to the Charles Bentley.
Yeah.
Offensive line boot camp. I believe it's in Arizona. Is that right, Lance?
I believe so. And Bentley actually put up video of John Jerry working out. That was up on social media. But, yeah, it was Jerry, Jerome, not Marshall Newhouse.
Oh, okay. I thought it was Newhouse. So do y'all feel that with Jerry, you think that would improve the line? If so, how much?
Well, I mean, to me, you got a couple of factors that could improve the Giants' offensive line. The fact that the same five starters right now are still here now for a second year in a row, although I'm still saying there could be somebody coming in from the outside. I'm not closing the book on that yet. But if these same five guys start for the second year in a row, that should help a little bit. Jerry going to the offensive line school maybe will help a little bit. The experience of Weston Richburg at center will probably help the line a little bit.
Second straight year in that spot.
And then the addition of Will Johnson at tight end from the Pittsburgh Steelers is going to help a little bit. He is a really good blocker, and he's an eager blocker and a willing blocker and a guy who blocks in line at the tight end spot. So he is automatically going to be a big benefit for Marshall Newhouse.
And I'll throw in, Jerome, real quickly, Eric Flowers back to full health after dealing with the ankle.
Absolutely.
And also having a year of experience under his belt, too, doesn't hurt. So you combine all of those factors, the fact that there's continuity, which you pointed out, Paul, on the offensive line, you know, that is something that every team strives for, to bring back the same five so that they're all comfortable playing next to one another.
Jerome, we've just given you probably four or five reasons why they could be incrementally better. But I'll be honest with you. I'll throw out the continuity element or factor if they can get an absolute bona fide stud offensive lineman from the outside. The heck with the continuity. If you know you've got a much better player that you can put on the field, you go get him.
So do you believe that when Jerry going to the camp, would the rookie from Miami last year, I can't think of his name, You're talking about Florida, or you still think he's still battling for the guard position?
Jerome, you're talking about Bobby Hart from Florida State, the seventh round pick from last season, who has again worked out some at guard and more at tackle during this offseason because they want him not only to be the if they think that Jerry's going to win the guard spot. They now are saying, well, you know what? We better get Bobby Hart ready to play tackle because, at the very least, he might wind up being the third tackle on this team. Because here's the thing. The Giants actually have more interior linemen who can play than they do tackles. They've got Flowers. They've got Newhouse. And I'm going to tell you right now, there's nobody else on this roster who I would feel comfortable with putting in a game to play tackle if one of those two guys went down. Bobby Hart, by default, is going to have to be the third tackle right now because inside, they've got guys. They've got Brett Jones to back up at center. They've got Dallas Reynolds to back up at guard if they want. They've got McDermott, the kid from the Miami Hurricanes, who they brought in during training camp, who can back up at center or at guard. They've got Adam Gettis, who can back up at guard, who has also played some center in training camp or in the offseason program as well. So they got a plethora of guys that they can throw in the interior line if they go down. But who's the third tackle? Out of necessity. See, some fans were getting on us a little bit, certainly on me, saying, well, this is a couple of months ago. Bobby Hart is taking snaps at tackle. He's going to be competing with Newhouse for the right tackle spot. No, that was not initially the plan. Bobby Hart is better suited to play guard. There's no question about that. With his footwork, he's a better guard than he is a tackle
in
this league.
But as insurance, it doesn't hurt to have him prepared for both positions.
You want him to be able to play
just
both
like they're
positions.
Doing at the corner position, they're doing the same thing. They're moving guys inside and outside.
No question. But see, they think he's better suited to play guard, which means he needs more work at tackle if they're going to try to coach him up.
Well, but if you're going to do that, you do that during the OTAs.
And that's why they did it.
You don't do that in the regular season.
And that's why they did it.
It's perfect sense.
They gave him a ton more reps at tackle on the outside because they thought he was further away from being an NFL tackle than he is from being an NFL guard. And with no one else on the depth chart to play it, he's going to be the third tackle.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you, Paul, but for the sake of names, I'll at least throw out from a veteran experience perspective, however he has moved around during the course of his career, you have Byron Stingley. I would put him in that conversation. Once again, I'm not saying that that's an answer in the views of the front office, but that would be the next tackle in the conversation after you talk about Hart and so forth. Once again, not the conversation is still.
You want to go four deep?
No, I'm not. I don't want to peruse that. I don't want to necessarily get you animated, even though there's no camera to show it.
You're right.
That is the next name.
He would be the next guy. But do you really want to go to your fourth tackle in a game?
Of course. You don't want to be put in that position. You can't control injuries, and you never call upon that self. But,
no.
I mean, if you want to at least analyze the depth chart for the diehards out there, and you're trying to determine, who's the next guy up, Stingley, to me, would be right after Hart on the depth chart in terms of your tackles.
There's no Locklear and there's no Whitfield.
No. And
they're always, not here.
Correct. And we've always talked about those swing type of guys, or even a David Deal, who you moved around a little bit, too, during his tenure.
Those are
assets. You always love to have a guy on the offensive line that in a pinch, you put him in a guard, you put him on tackle. One name, though, that we haven't mentioned, Paul, because he's part of the starting five, let's not forget Justin Pugh has that role. He's your jack-of-all-trades type of offensive lineman. Let's not forget. You don't want to move him around because, once again, it goes back to continuity, but he can play guard and he can play tackle. He's an option, too, if, God forbid, they suffered an injury.
You like to have those guys. Remember when they got Sean Andrews for a year, too?
Yeah. But Locklear, I think, is the best example because if you go back to how they utilized him,
oh man,
he was everywhere. Tight end, tackle, you name it.
And when Deal went down, Locklear stepped in at that right tackle spot and played extremely well that season, and then he wound up getting hurt.
Yeah. You need those guys. You need those reliable options. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. So glad you could join us for Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Menno. Let's head back to the lines. Well, we had Baltimore as the main theme today, so it's only appropriate we hear from Shakes in Baltimore, Maryland. Shakes, what's happening?
What's going on, fellas?
Hey, Shakes.
What it do?
Great to talk to you again. And I'll tell you, I got the shakes from being away for 2 weeks. I'm so glad to be back. I had
waited to drop that pun.
I had withdrawal, man.
Good pun.
Big time.
Good pun.
What you got for us today?
Real pun intended. Real pun intended.
Absolutely. You coming up to camp?
Yeah, I'm going to try.
Good.
Yeah, I'm really going to try.
Good.
I'm really going to try. I'm going to try to see y'all. I know John kind of got on me last year about it because I said I was going to come, but I couldn't. Yeah, whatever. But I wanted to talk about Hankins, though.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking around the league, and I'm looking at these defensive players getting a lot of money. One in particular, Fletcher Cox. Now, don't get me wrong. Fletcher Cox is a beast. Okay, he's a beast. But to me, in my opinion, Hankins is better. And if you look at the numbers, not last year, But the best out of Hankins, you got 7 sacks, right?
Yeah, but that happened only 1 year. Let's not forget about that.
That's the best you can get from Hankins that he's shown. The best that Fletcher Cox shown was 3 sacks. Now, I mean, sacks ain't everything, okay? But that's a big indication of this guy gets paid a lot of money, and then Hankins is sitting here going on his last contract. To me, I feel like the time is now to renegotiate with his contract and extend him.
Well, wait a second, Shakes. Two things I want to ask you. Two things I want to ask you before you go any further. First of all, Fletcher Cox, didn't he have like almost 10 sacks last year?
He had 9.5 last year.
All right. So,
3 he had in 2013.
Yeah, that's right. He did have 9.
Yeah, he's averaged about 5 sacks a season if you do the math.
I mean, so that you puzzled me with that thought. But the thing that I want to mention to you is this.
Yeah.
Okay. Jonathan Hankins had a terrific, and I mean a Pro Bowl caliber season in 2014. I think we would all agree he was terrific. But last year, first half of the season, before he got hurt, he wasn't playing very well. I mean, I'm not going to pull any punches from you, Shakes. I happen to like Jonathan. I think he's a really good guy. He's gregarious. He's fun. He's got a smile on his face. He's very talkative. He's very cooperative. He's a good teammate. I like everything about him. And I told you when they drafted him, I got scouts telling me he should be a future Pro Bowl player. And he looked like one in 2014. But in 2015, he was not playing very well. He looked slow. He looked out of condition. He wasn't getting after it. And then he got hurt, and that washed out the second half of his season. Jonathan Hankins has to show me 2014 production before I start talking about giving him a big contract.
Well, and the other thing, Shakes, to not overlook is, remember, Fletcher Cox was a defensive end in that 3-4 Eagles defense. They're moving now to a 4-3 this year under Jim Schwartz, so he's going back to his normal position based on college, which is a defensive tackle. But the Eagles, if you look at the market, Shakes, they were paying him as if he was a defensive end, especially with his consistency in the pass rush department and the sack department. If you're looking at that, and I'm only alluding to what you were saying, I think you're maybe considering, well, if this is what the market's going to be like for defensive tackles, the Giants should consider locking up Jonathan Hankins. And correct me if I'm wrong, Shakes, I think that's what you're alluding to. I don't know if it's a fair comparison considering Cox was classified more as a defensive end when he was being paid.
Let me correct you on that. No, that's not what I was saying. But what I was saying is that these guys are getting paid, and I feel like the time is now to pay Hankins. And you're right. He did have 9 sacks, P-Dot. You're right. But before that, it was 3 sacks. And that's Fletcher Cox. Now, my man Hankins gave you 7 sacks in that 1 year. Now, last year, I agree with you, didn't have the year that I expected him to have. But at the same time, I looked at who was next to him, and it was freaking Coon. And we all know how I feel about Coon.
Yeah, so, I think we do.
So, you know, I look at little certain things, and I'm like, ugh.
Shakes,
okay, well,
Shakes,
this is
a show me year.
Get him now on a good deal. Instead, he goes out, balls out this season, gets another 7 sacks, and then we got to pay him Fletcher Cox money next year. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, in other words, you want to sign him now while his stock is down.
That's what I was talking about. Yeah, that's what I thought you were talking about, Shakes, where you wanted to lock him up now because you're worried about the market. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, you're pretty much right. I'd rather pay a little cheaper than to pay a Fletcher Cox deal.
Let me ask you this question. From the player's perspective, Jonathan Hankins knows he didn't have a great year, knows it was half ruined by injury, and knows he's in a contract year. What's his incentive
to settle now?
To settle,
yeah, when he could have a career year.
He must be thinking, right?
Because my boy Steve said the same thing. This is my thing, and it's the same thing I said about I was mad about Bradford complaining about the 2-year deal and they drafting a rookie. I'm like, dude, just go out and play. You know what I mean? Here's the thing with Hankins and that. I feel like.
Did we lose Shane?
Especially with an injury last year, like, things are not guaranteed. things are not guaranteed in the NFL. So if you can get a lot of money, especially when you're on your rookie deal, and you can get a lot of money, I think you should take that. Because you don't know if you would get hurt this season, and then you get nothing next year. Nothing.
Jonathan,
if the Giants come to you with a good deal, I think you should sign that.
I think the best case scenario for what you want, Shakes, and this is strictly a hypothetical because I don't know that they have had any conversations. Best case scenario, and this does happen, guys get locked up in the middle of their contract year. They start off, they get a first month or two, they look like the kind of player that the team wants to keep around, and then they'll approach him in October, and they'll say, hey, can we do this deal now? We got a little money under the cap. Let's do this now so we can, jockey some numbers around, and we'll get this done before you go to free agency at the end of the season. It does happen. Some guys don't want to talk about a contract during a season. Other guys are willing to do it. So how about this? How about Jonathan Hankins comes to camp, looks good, kicks butt in the preseason, comes into the regular season, cooking like a freight train, gets something going, and maybe they sign him to another long-term deal in October. Is that okay with you?
It's okay, but I just wanted to say this. Like, in recent history, Reese doesn't do things like that. The last guy I've seen that, I think, happen was O.C. Uminor, if I can recall.
Ooh, I'm trying to think. The last contract that was
before the rookie contract expired.
That was signed. I'm trying to think.
Prince had the option, so that's different.
Right.
I wouldn't throw him in that.
I'm trying to think. The last guy that was signed in the middle of a season. Ooh, I'd have to check on that, Shakes.
That's a good question, though. Yeah. But I can answer the question, Shakes. I think to look at it at least in a shorter lens at the defensive tackle position. It's fair to say that what they've normally done in recent history is they draft a guy as insurance in case they lose somebody in free agency. If you just study the defensive tackle position, which is what Hankins has played, Linville Joseph, and then you go back to Barry Colefield, there's that track record there. So, I mean, I understand the point you're making with respect to that. But I think that what you have to look at it is you have to look at it two ways. Jonathan Hankins could have the mindset, as Paul alluded to, I think I have an opportunity to have a career year and make myself even more attractive on the open market, so why should I settle for a contract now? And the Giants could look at it from a different perspective, Shakes, where they could say, Hankins had 1 year where he had 7 sacks, got hurt last year. We want to see a little bit more before we are willing to invest in a player like that. So I could see questions and concerns on both ends, and in order to get a deal done, remember, both participants have to be willing to meet halfway.
Yeah.
It can't just be the Giants want him, Hankins may not want the deal, or Hankins wants the deal, and the Giants are not ready to do it. You have to at least look at it from that perspective.
Yeah, I just hope that I want them to get a deal done because I want them to get out the way. I think we got that. We kept the $18-19 million for him in pew. So I just wanted to get out the way. And
Shakes, by the way, I just wanted to throw out a name to you, and I confirmed it on the internet. Corey Webster, back in December of 2008, got an extension. But he might be the last time that the Giants signed a guy to an extension in season. I'm not going to say for sure, but he is one of them. He may not be the last one, but he's one of them. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? It's just not in his recent history to do that. So that's just my worry on it. But thanks for taking my call, y'all. I appreciate it.
You got it, Jake. Appreciate the phone call. Before we head back to the lines at 201-939-4513, a few people with tweets, and I know those of you who can't get to the phone, we want to make sure you are a part of the program. On the topic of Jonathan Hankins, Wayne Morris at Wayne Morris BC asks, is Jonathan Hankins 100% healthy? Well, he spoke to the media right before they broke for this month period, and he indicated that he should be ready to go, training camp, recovered from that torn pectoral muscle. I didn't hear anything about them holding him back or there being any concerns, Paul.
Coach McAdoo expects him to have a green light.
So as far as that goes, Wayne, he should be ready to go. There should be no concerns with respect to that. Let's take a look at a few more tweets here. AJ Marshall at AJ Marshall 3. Do you think the Ravens will be a playoff team this season? Bouncing back from that 5-11 campaign.
Boy.
That's a tough division. It's by far one of the toughest divisions in the NFL.
Again, I always believe they're going to be competitive. But to say they're going to be a playoff team, I'm not so sure, especially after talking to Jerry Coleman, the beat guy from The Fan earlier. It sounds like they got a lot of questions to answer.
And I think, though, in fairness, at least if you look at the division, Cincinnati has some question marks, too. They lost a few players in free agency, specifically Andy Dalton's targets. Now, Marvin Jones signed with the Detroit Lions, and Mohamed Sanu is now with the Atlanta Falcons. You know, part of the Bengals' offense being successful is they were able to spread the wealth.
No doubt.
Now A.J. Green is the guy. Some of their young guys are going to have to step up, as well as their tight end. So that's a question mark there. I think the defense is in pretty good shape. Pittsburgh, who I think is the strongest team in the division.
I agree.
But their defense was very shaky last year, specifically the secondary, Paul. And let's not forget about this. Martavis Bryant's out for the season because of the suspension. How does that change the dynamics of the passing game? And Le'Veon Bell's coming off a knee injury. So they have question marks, too, as impressed I am with them. I think it's really up in the air in terms of who could perhaps take charge in that division. So, you know, Baltimore's in the hunt despite all their question marks.
Again, I will never consider them a pushover at any time. I just can't do it. That's not the kind of ball the Harbaugh's teams play.
Well, a man who knows Baltimore very well. He knows Maryland, the entire state, very well. This is a theme today. It's no coincidence.
Are you saying he's crabby?
Yes, that may be perhaps a good way to describe him. We'll allow him to perhaps defend himself. That is Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Great, Len. How are you?
Just real quick, I think the Ravens are going to have a tough time making the playoffs out of that division.
Yeah.
And, geez, they had a lot of injuries last year, which is just unbelievable. I think they matched us in injuries. But listen, on to another thing. Hey, glad you guys are back. It's great to hear you talking Giants football again.
Great to be back,
yeah,
let me
absolutely.
Tell you. Oh, my goodness.
you know, Paul, early in the show today, you threw out a name. I caught the name, didn't quite catch the reference point, but it was somebody that I've wanted to talk to you guys about, once you got back on air. You threw out Dallas Reynolds' name. He's not currently on the roster. He hasn't signed with anyone else. And you know what? As worried as I am about 7, 8, 9 along the offensive line, you know, every time we put Dallas Reynolds into the game, I mean, he's not a starter. But I'm worried about 7, 8, 9. I just don't see the players there. But, you know, every time we put Dallas Reynolds into a game, he held his own. I mean, he did okay. I wouldn't want him in there for 5 or 6 games. But I wonder, you know, what happened with Reynolds? Why didn't we make a move to sign this guy? I thought, again, okay.
Well, I think the thing with
when we put him in the game.
Yeah, and you know, again, he typifies the kind of guy who they've been able to plug in on the interior line, you know, over the course of the last couple of years as a versatile reserve.
Yes, yes. He played the two positions. He could play center or either of the guard spots.
I think the problem there is that he's 32 years old, and I think they really wanted to try to get younger. And for example, the kid they brought in, who I believe had a cup of coffee on the Eagles practice squad. In fact, speak of the devil, Reynolds had been an Eagle before the
Correct.
Giants.
He was with the Eagles.
Yes, he had. Yes, he started for the Eagles.
A few years he was there with
McDermott was University of Miami Hurricane.
Yes,
he was a center by trade. Think he had a cup of coffee on the practice squad. Did he not with the Eagles last year?
You may be right. I'll look that up just to confirm.
And the Giants really like him in that Dallas Reynolds mold. And he's a young guy, came from a pro-style system, and they've even given him some work at guard here during the offseason program.
Yes, I was aware of McDermott, and I picked up a couple of one-liners, in other chat rooms and so forth about his play. Again, not a starter, but, boy, I'm concerned, like most people are, about, 7, 8, 9. I think it's 95% sure the 6 guys on the offensive line. I mean, that's who the top 6 are going to be. I don't know how we're going to sign anybody.
Well, and Len, another name that I want to throw out with your concern and your question about that 7, 8, 9 spot, and this is similar to what Paul was talking about, the connection between the new offensive line coach and some of the linemen that were brought in.
A couple of 49er guys were brought
including
in.
Including Ryan Seymour, who's also a guy that plays the guard position. I don't know enough about his background at the center position. I forget whether or not he did get some snaps there. He might have. I have to confirm that. But his comfort level and his history with Mike Solari is another reason why, Len, I think they may have gone in the direction of some other players because, you know, Solari comes in, he wants to bring in his own guys, he's got a vision, and maybe that's a reason why they didn't bring back Dallas Reynolds. But here's the thing about a player like Reynolds. Somebody goes down and Reynolds is still out on the market, he knows the Giants system. You could always re-sign him in a pinch, which the Giants have done before. But I think they want to get younger, and I think that you have to understand there's a new offensive line coach here. He's going to want to bring in some of his own talent.
Yes, yes. I can understand that. I can understand that.
Dylan Farrell, by the way, is the other 49er who's here right now in training camp. Yeah.
You know, while you guys were, you know, off air for a couple of weeks with nothing better to do, I started looking back at some of the tapes from last year's games and trying to pick up some stuff on YouTube.
Why would you do that?
Are you trying to get an edge on Paul here?
Whoa! I mean, wait a second. No. No. You know what I did? I rewatched Super Bowl 42.
There you go.
Yeah, but see, Len went into the trenches. See, you're losing a little luster.
No.
Len went into the trenches and studied last.
But I've already studied all that tape.
No. But he's now getting in training camp zone. You're going back and reminiscing a few. Years
I
ago.
Needed something
no
to brighten up. I needed there's, something to brighten up my summer.
I'm
I went
sorry,
back to Super Bowl 42.
There's no time to reminisce. This is time to get down and dirty and talk about how this team is going to improve. And I respect Len for
go ahead,
looking
Len.
At the tape from last year.
Oh yeah. But I can't let Paul's line go by. I got to tell you what I did also in the last 2 weeks, Paul. You're going to love this. I went back and watched an entire replay off of YouTube on the 1986 Giants-Redskins game, late season here. I think it was the next to the last game of the year.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a tremendous football game. And if anybody wanted ever to see why Lawrence Taylor is the greatest player ever to play professional football, just watch the tape in that game. Oh, my gosh. Oh, God.
Len,
that's just unbelievable.
Len, I got to tell you, it's hard to do that because it makes you cry. It does. It makes you cry. You look at Phil Sims and Joe Morris and Lawrence Taylor and Leonard Marshall and Carl Banks and Harry Carson and George Martin.
My gosh.
And you look at all those guys and you say, oh, my God. And Len, I tell young folks all the time, and they don't want to listen to me, that was the golden era. Man, you talk about the 70s and the 80s. Those two decades, you had the best of the NFL. Those teams, my goodness, don't even compare what we're watching today compared to those championship teams of the 80s. Don't even try doing it because you can't.
Listen, walking out of that stadium the day, Paul, that day, I don't think I've ever been higher. That was a great, great Giants win.
It's a great team.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, just a terrific win. Listen, to show you how much I studied the tape on these games last year, here's my expertise as a fan. I'm going to ask it in the form of a question, and that is, how in the heck did we lose some of those games?
Well, that's the million-dollar question.
From Dallas to Atlanta to New Orleans to the Jets to the Patriots to Carol, how in the world? I mean,
you got to close the book, my man. Don't relive that stuff. That's pain.
You're pouring salt into the wounds here. That's what you're doing,
That took hard work to lose those games. Unbelievable. Hey, let me throw out a name for you along the defensive line. A guy I kind of saw a little bit in college, undrafted free agent, defensive end. I think he can play tackle, too. He had a nice career at North Carolina State, a guy named Greg Rose.
Mike
Watch
Rose.
This guy.
Mean,
he's a pretty good he's
Mike
a pretty
Rose,
good
yeah.
Mike
player.
Rose.
Mike, yeah.
Mike Rose, pretty good football player.
He could get to the passer in college.
Yep,
I know. I'll be honest with you, Len. What I saw here in the early part of the offseason program, he's a guy that I got my eye on, but he has done nothing to this point that has stood out that made me feel like, oh, my goodness, he's got to have a roster spot. I'm going to be looking at him, though, in August.
Okay. Hey, thanks for the time, guys. And
you got it, Len.
Back.
All right, you
good
too.
Talking with
we'll
you.
Talk soon.
Absolutely.
We'll talk soon, buddy. Bye-bye.
No, the two of you got to be careful. You tend to date yourselves, you know, when you start reminiscing and everything. I'm sitting back here, you know, you're referring to the young kids that you're telling about Lawrence Taylor and everybody. Just warning you, you know, you got to be careful. You know, you're going to start dating yourself.
You do.
Paul.
You did see him, right?
Yes, I did see him. Oh, thank you. You know, I don't
God
need to be put
bless
to bed and be read a bedtime story. Okay?
God bless.
You know, yes.
I'm glad.
Yeah, I'm glad that that makes you feel content.
Well,
yes.
You know, I'm just happy for you because it was quite an honor to watch that man.
I can
play.
Only imagine, yes. From what I've been told,
yes,
and from what I may have seen, too, which you may or may not be willing to give me credit for. On the topic of players that you are looking forward to seeing at training camp, you just referred to Mike Rose, and there's a question posed by Omar at Cluehead Pro. He asks, you know, who are some other guys that perhaps you're looking forward to? I'll throw out two in particular based on what I saw in OTAs. I'm very anxious to see these two in pads to see whether or not they're going to pick up where they left off. And it's two members of the secondary. I want to see what Dante Dion can do.
Yes.
Speaking of undrafted
players.
He's
my dark horse.
At a Boise State. And then I want to see what his college teammate, Darian Thompson, is going to do, considering how well he looked in OTAs. Those two in particular, get the pads on, see them in preseason, because they made a lot of noise in the offseason period, and the positive is whether or not they can obviously translate that to when the pads are on.
I want to throw something out here, because I said it before the break, and now that we're back, I'm going to say it again as we warm up for training camp. I think the Giants have not only a really good young rookie class here, which has a lot of potential. I think the undrafted rookie class may be the best I've seen in about 15 years.
It's deep.
I mean, they brought in some guys who are going to fight for roster spots. And, you know, Dante Dion certainly is going to be at the head of that pack. You look at a guy like Roger Lewis in the receiving core is going to fight for a spot on the
Bowling
back end.
Green.
Anthony Doble, the European kid, is a very intriguing player who's got a tremendous skill set, and he's got that Spider-Man reach, but he's raw. But you're going to have to keep an eye on him. You look at tight end. All of a sudden, they got quantity. Now, we're not sure how good these guys are going to turn out to be, but you get a young guy like Lacoste coming back.
Ryan Malik.
You look at Malik, who had a really good off-season program.
Yeah.
And has suddenly injected himself into that competition. And, you know, he's a guy who came out of nowhere. It's going to be very, very interesting. I'll give you another guy who I'm kind of keeping an eye on. Okwara.
Romero, yeah. I was going to throw
defensive
him out.
Defensive end from Notre Dame.
And then his teammate, Ishaq Williams, too. Those two in particular. It's funny. We got two Boise State guys that played together. We got two Notre Dame guys that played together. Those two in particular.
And all four of those guys were undrafted. Okay?
Well, Darian Thompson was drafted.
Well, you're right. Let me take that back.
Yeah. Three of the four.
You know, these are guys who, you know, you can't ignore them when you watch them during the course of the spring. They're going to be guys you have to watch very carefully during the course of training camp. And you know what? There are 10 practice squad spots available. And I know people don't understand this, but many times most of those practice squad spots are truly scout team players who are there to fill roles for your practice. They're not necessarily developmental players who you believe are diamonds in the rough and can groom into becoming guys who are going to make your 53. This practice squad is going to have a bunch of real prospects on it who could potentially rise up and be threats to the 53. That's how different and how much respect I have for this group of undrafted rookie free agents.
And you just hope that they don't get plucked by other teams, because remember, everybody's being scouted. But I do think you raised an interesting point, Paul, that, you know, God forbid there's an injury, you feel as if the practice squad is an extension of the 53-man roster so that you can bring somebody in who has experience, knows the system, and so forth, as opposed to maybe more of in the developmental type of phase. Because, you know, we just listed all of these undrafted players that we ran through in terms of who we're looking forward to, and they cover all positions.
Oh, I know.
It's not as if the depth is just on defense or the depth is a defensive end. You know, we threw out tight ends. We threw out corners. We threw out linebackers, defensive ends, wide receivers. You got a little bit of everything.
You want to go totally off the board? Marshawn Copridge, who's an FCS All-American at running back. I mean, The kid put up some, I don't want to disrespect him, the young man put up a lot of really good numbers and some really good play at the FCS level. And now here he is trying out at Giants camp, and there's no room for him at running back.
That's but seven running backs right there.
There's no room.
Yeah.
But you know what? I could see him being a practice squad guy, and if he's able to hang around for a year, there's no telling that next July, maybe he has a shot at cracking the back end.
Well, look at Matt Lacoste. Matt Lacoste was on the practice squad. I know he had a brief stint with the Jets, but then when he returned
right.
to the Giants, on the practice squad, and then moved up to the roster, and now healthy, you know, is back in the thick of things. So we've seen practice squad players previously, or even unknown commodities. I mean, look at a Victor Cruz, for example. You know, his scenario when he got hurt in his first year with the Giants after that great preseason, and then the following year, it was a wow-me type of scenario. So it happens before. You know, guys skyrocket out of nowhere.
Lance, it is great to be back.
Oh, I can only imagine the blood flowing through your body. The glow right now. If only people could see it. But it is good to be back, in all seriousness. Glad that we were able to interact with the Giants faithful, both on Twitter as well as the phones. We appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. We're going to be back up and running. Once again, it's primarily going to be audio. No video yet. As soon as the video is up and running, we will certainly let you know. But we're back. So we're here to talk. We're here to hear your thoughts and so forth.
And tomorrow I'll be with John. We will be previewing the Week 7 opponent, the Los Angeles Rams, who the Giants will play in London.
And we will continue the preview the rest of the week. I'll be back up and running on Wednesday as we cover different teams. We continue to preview the Giants' opponents. So once again, appreciate everybody for getting back into the mix, making sure noon p.m. Eastern is in your rotation as something to tune into. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your day on Monday. We'll be back up and running on Tuesday right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live.